Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, June 22nd, 2023. Marathon woman found guilty of first-degree murder in 2018 hit-and-run killing. By Allegra Hobbs. Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. Lizette McGuire of Marathon was found guilty of first-degree murder by a Brewster County jury on Tuesday for her role in the 2018 hit-and-run death of Alpine resident Aquiles Armendariz Gonzalez. McGuire is due back in court on Monday for her sentencing, according to the Brewster County District Clerk's office. On social media, friends and family of Gonzalez expressed relief as the long-awaited trial began last week and when the verdict was rendered 8 days later. 5 years later and justice has been served, wrote one supporter, who had changed their profile photo to one of Gonzalez. In the early morning hours of April 29, 2018, Alpine police officers responded to reports of a hit-and-run at the 400 block of North 17th Street, and arrived to find Gonzalez suffering from severe trauma consistent with being struck by a vehicle. He was transported to the trauma unit of Big Bend Regional Medical Center, where he died shortly after arrival. Witnesses to the hit-and-run told authorities that the vehicle that struck Gonzalez was a 2012 GMC Acadia driven by Lizette McGuire. Police at the time confirmed that McGuire and Gonzalez had a child together. McGuire was taken into custody and charged with first-degree murder. Her bail was set at $150,000, and she was released on bond shortly after. A passenger, John J. Whitley, traveling with McGuire at the time of the incident, was also arrested and charged with failing to report a felony, a Class A misdemeanor. That case was dismissed in August of 2022, according to the Brewster County Clerk's office. The motion to dismiss stated that Whitley had satisfactorily completed the pretrial diversion program. Police said there had been a verbal confrontation between Gonzalez, McGuire, and Whitley before Gonzalez had been struck by the vehicle. District Attorney Ori White said an investigation had shown that McGuire had intentionally struck Gonzalez with her vehicle. This past week, prosecutors were able to convince a jury that was the case. They did a very good job with the investigation. The entire Alpine office did a great job, said White. They were thorough and they achieved a good result. McGuire's attorney, Alberto Ruiz, did not return a request for comment by press time. Photo by John Ferguson. Local officials met on the Presidio International Bridge to celebrate the opening of a new lane. Local officials celebrate partial reopening of Presidio International Bridge by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. On Monday, a ribbon-cutting ceremony was held on the Presidio International Bridge to mark an important milestone, the opening of a newly constructed lane on the Mexico-bound side of the bridge. Officials from the City of Presidio, Customs and Border Protection, and CAPUFE, Caminos y Puentes Federales, gathered to mark the occasion. It was an important milestone for the crew working on the bridge and an even bigger milestone for locals frustrated by years of delays. The Trump administration signed off on a permit in 2017 to build an additional two lanes on the bridge, in hopes of alleviating congestion and growing cross-border trade. Both Mexico and the United States were initially working in lockstep, but construction on the American side stalled in 2020 due to pandemic-related and later political delays. In order for construction on the American side to pick up where it left off, the governor's office needed to give the project a stamp of approval, but for over a year, there were no signatures, leading to finger-pointing from both sides of the border about who was to blame for the stalled construction. In February of this year, permission was finally granted, and work could begin again. For the first time in 3 years, there were work boots and hard hats on the bridge. Construction is slated for completion in September, but local officials were able to gather and celebrate a midpoint of sorts on Monday. The crew is in the midst of finishing up a Mexico-bound two-lane bridge parallel to the existing bridge. One of the new lanes opened up, marking an important next step. Presidio Mayor John Ferguson was in attendance, enthusiastically snapping photos and chatting with others who were excited to see the bridge project near completion. The workers were excited to show everybody that the bridge is coming along, he said. Ferguson was told that the opening of the new lanes would lessen the strain on the existing bridge and allow space for the crews to rehabilitate the existing two lanes. Before calling it quits, the second lane on the Mexico-bound bridge will be opened, as well as a brand new pedestrian crossing on that side as well. I think everybody's going to be happy to see it all wrapped up, he said. Presidio County Judge Joe Portillo was also thrilled to celebrate the milestone. He felt that the bridge construction was moving along smoothly. He hadn't heard of any supply chain issues, and until this week, the crews had been working in unusually mild spring weather. He had faith in the contractors meeting the September deadline. We've seen more progress than we have in 3 years, he said. We're there to support them and be a cheerleader for them. Sonia Murillo, charged with child sexual exploitation, held without bond. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, Sonia Murillo, a Marfa resident arrested this month for sexual exploitation of children, will be detained without bond for the remainder of court proceedings. At a detention hearing last week, held in the U.S. Federal Courthouse in Alpine, Murillo waived her right to a preliminary hearing and declined to contest a motion from the U.S. Attorney's Office to have her held without bond on the grounds that she posed a flight risk and a danger to the community. Judge David B. Fannin ordered Murillo held without bond, noting there are no conditions of release that will reasonably assure the appearance of the defendant. Bart Medley, Murillo's attorney, declined to comment on the decision to waive the detention hearing. Murillo is currently being held in the West Texas Detention Facility in Sierra Blanca. The case will now be heard by a federal grand jury, which will decide whether or not to indict Murillo. If Murillo is indicted, she can either enter a guilty plea or go to trial. Murillo was arrested by U.S. Marshals in Marfa on June 7th, according to a Presidio County Sheriff's Office arrest report, after the filing of a criminal complaint by a Texas Department of Public Safety investigator alleging Murillo committed sexual exploitation of children. While, quote, conducting a forensic review of a cell phone from a different child pornography investigation in Marfa, end quote, the complaint states, investigators discovered video evidence of Murillo performing sexual acts on a young child. The videos, at least 8 of them in total, show Murillo's face in full view, plus a distinctive tattoo on her shoulder, per court records. A previous romantic partner of Murillo's, Marfa resident Patricio Javier P.J. Serrano, was arrested in May on child pornography charges. Investigators have not responded to requests for comment on whether or not the cases are related. Serrano is scheduled to be arraigned before United States Magistrate Judge David Fannin on Thursday at the United States District Courthouse in Pecos. Murillo, 32, worked as a property manager and substitute teacher at Marfa ISD. Interim Superintendent Arturo Alferez said to his knowledge no law enforcement officials had been in contact with the district regarding the ongoing investigation. Alferez declined to comment further. Brewster County Sheriff's Office seizes 2,000 pounds of marijuana in Terlingua by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Terlingua. On Sunday morning, the Brewster County Sheriff's Office, BCSO, responded to a call about a truck and horse trailer that had been parked for several days at the Motor Inn in Study Butte. BCSO's South County deputies responded quickly and discovered around 2,000 pounds of marijuana partially concealed between bales of alfalfa. Shortly thereafter, the BCSO pulled over a vehicle circling the scene. Around noon, officials apprehended Axel Manuel Olivas of Odessa and a male Mexican national who had the key to the truck that had allegedly been spotted pulling the horse trailer, according to the sheriff's office. Olivas was transported to the Brewster County Jail, where he is being held on a third-degree felony human smuggling charge. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson explained that additional charges may be pressed against Olivas after a pending investigation. So far, Olivas is facing a single state charge, but he could also face federal charges. It was not immediately clear whether the Mexican national, who authorities say lacked documentation allowing entry to the U.S., would face charges, but was turned over to Customs and Border Protection. CBP did not return requests for comment on the matter by press time. It was also not immediately clear whether either of the men had retained legal representation. Attempts to identify and reach defense attorneys in the case were unsuccessful as of press time. The seizure was the most significant drug bust executed by the department this year. Dodson said that the majority of smuggling arrests carried out by his department were human trafficking. "It's a lot easier to smuggle humans," he said. The seized marijuana will be turned over to the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, for destruction. Typically, the sheriff's office will hold seized narcotics just long enough to collect samples for their own investigation. The arrangement between the DEA and the BCSO is relatively new. Dodson said that previously, the sheriff's department had been responsible for destroying its own seizures. Without the DEA's high-powered incinerators, the process was long and unwieldy. Dodson described a few do-it-yourself narcotics disposals as disastrous, though he felt that physics was more to blame than the efforts of his department. "Marijuana doesn't burn like you think it would," he said. "When it's compacted, no air gets in there, and it's miserable." For now, all agencies involved in the case are preparing for the next phase of the investigation. Dodson wasn't holding his breath for everything to wrap up quickly. "It doesn't happen overnight. It could be a couple of months," he said. Photo courtesy of the Brewster County Sheriff's Office. On Sunday, the Brewster County Sheriff's Office seized nearly 2,000 pounds of marijuana concealed in a horse trailer at the Motor Inn in Terlingua. Hospital District talks plans for new Terlingua Clinic EMT services. By Sam Karras. sam@bigbensentinel.com. Terlingua. On Monday, Terlinguans packed the Red Patillo Community Center to discuss plans and priorities for a new clinic in Terlingua. Big Bend Regional Hospital District, BBRHD, Executive Director J.D. Newsom, grant writer Lynette Brim, and Susan Martin of Terlingua Fire and EMS, TFUMS, were on hand to field questions and suggestions from the community. The BBRHD announced last June that Presidio and Terlingua were the recipients of a large grant from the USDA. This week's town hall was an important step towards realizing long-term goals. Presidio will open an after-hours clinic. Terlingua will have a part-time clinic for the first time in 2 decades. Exactly what Terlingua's clinic will look like has yet to be determined. The original USDA grant includes operational costs, but does not cover the construction of new facilities. The existing TFEMS response building is pretty occupied, according to Martin. Instead, Newsom posed the idea of a mobile clinic, a service that Preventative Healthcare Services already offers in Presidio County. Before the opening of a pharmacy in Marfa, prescriptions for locals were also dispensed on wheels. In theory, you could start that tomorrow, he said. Martin thought it was a good place to start, especially for a community as dispersed as Terlingua. As a first responder, she's traveled all over South Brewster County to treat community members in distress. We can get closer to our people, so it's not as much of a challenge to come to the doctor, she said. I think it fits the way we live down here. In addition to the new clinics, both Presidio and Terlingua will also benefit from a community paramedicine program to expand the range of services that local EMTs are able to provide. For me, it's the most exciting part of this project, said Newsom. It's going to provide a very impactful service to some of the most vulnerable residents in Terlingua. Paramedics have an advanced EMT certification that expands their scope of care to provide certain medicines en route to the hospital. Community paramedicine takes that training out of the ambulance and applies to non-emergency settings. Community paramedics can provide certain kinds of primary care, such as collecting blood and urine samples, instructing patients on proper use of medication, and conducting checkups, like well baby visits. The BBRHD is partnering with Texas Tech's Health Sciences Center in El Paso to provide training for first responders and to collect data to help keep the program on target. The ultimate goal of the program is to reduce transports to the hospital by at least 25%, easing the pressure on a strained rural EMS system. Martin explained that the original concept of community paramedicine was to provide follow-up care. Providing a checkup after a hospital stay or an office visit so that patients don't have to leave home to see the doctor. That model has been quickly evolving, especially within rural medicine. She would like to see the program adapted to suit Terlingua's unique needs. By encouraging folks to call the community paramedics directly to see if issues can be resolved at home, rather than traveling an hour or more to see a doctor. It's a great unknown, she said, but I want to bring health care to you guys. Monday's conversation was just the tip of the iceberg. One of the main challenges in Terlingua will be determining demand. Because the population fluctuates with the seasons, it can be difficult to predict when folks will need medical services. That same fluctuation also makes it difficult to provide stable jobs for the professionals who would potentially staff these services. Another unknown is telemedicine. In the past few years, the field has exploded, particularly in terms of access to mental health care. Newsom had even explored the possibility of an automatic diagnostic kiosk that could dispense medicine, but wasn't sure if that would necessarily be the right fit for Terlingua. The machines had only been piloted in areas with a high population density. Martin agreed, hoping instead to bring patients face-to-face with people they know and trust. "You can't bring in a $300,000 robot and fix everything," she said. "I think you could do a lot more with a lot less." The grant also provides funding for a social worker to help connect locals with resources and to encourage people to ask for help. The bigger picture to me is prevention, knowing what you need to do before it's an emergency, Martin said. "I love the people that make up Terlingua and their independent spirit, but we all need help sometimes." BBRHD is shooting to start clinic services early next year, hopefully by February 1st, if not sooner. Newsom was also hoping that the paramedicine program could get off the ground by August 1st, dependent on TFEMS' ability to hire new staff members. "As soon as they come on board, they're launching," he said. Brewster County Sheriff's Office seizes 2,000 pounds of marijuana in Terlingua. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Terlingua. On Sunday morning, the Brewster County Sheriff's Office, BCSO, responded to a call about a truck and horse trailer that had been parked for several days at the Motor Inn in Study Butte. BCSO's South County deputies responded quickly and discovered around 2,000 pounds of marijuana partially concealed between bales of alfalfa. Shortly thereafter, the BCSO pulled over a vehicle circling the scene. Around noon, officials apprehended Axel Manuel Olivas of Odessa and a male Mexican national who had the key to the truck that had allegedly been spotted pulling the horse trailer, according to the sheriff's office. Olivas was transported to the Brewster County Jail, where he is being held on a third-degree felony human smuggling charge. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson explained that additional charges may be pressed against Olivas after a pending investigation. So far, Olivas is facing a single state charge, but he could also face federal charges. It was not immediately clear whether the Mexican national, who authorities say lacked documentation allowing entry to the U.S., would face charges, but was turned over to Customs and Border Protection. CBP did not return requests for comment on the matter by press time. It was also not immediately clear whether either of the men had retained legal representation. Attempts to identify and reach defense attorneys in the case were unsuccessful as of press time. The seizure was the most significant drug bust executed by the department this year. Dodson said that the majority of smuggling arrests carried out by his department were human trafficking. "It's a lot easier to smuggle humans," he said. The seized marijuana will be turned over to the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, for destruction. Typically, the sheriff's office will hold seized narcotics just long enough to collect samples for their own investigation. The arrangement between the DEA and the BCSO is relatively new. Dodson said that previously, the sheriff's department had been responsible for destroying its own seizures. Without the DEA's high-powered incinerators, the process was long and unwieldy. Dodson described a few do-it-yourself narcotics disposals as disastrous, though he felt that physics was more to blame than the efforts of his department. "Marijuana doesn't burn like you think it would," he said. "When it's compacted, no air gets in there, and it's miserable." For now, all agencies involved in the case are preparing for the next phase of the investigation. Dodson wasn't holding his breath for everything to wrap up quickly. "It doesn't happen overnight. It could be a couple of months," he said. Photo courtesy of the Brewster County Sheriff's Office. On Sunday, the Brewster County Sheriff's Office seized nearly 2,000 pounds of marijuana concealed in a horse trailer at the Motor Inn in Terlingua. Hospital District talks plans for new Terlingua Clinic EMT services by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Terlingua. On Monday, Terlinguans packed the Red Patillo Community Center to discuss plans and priorities for a new clinic in Terlingua. Big Bend Regional Hospital District, BBRHD, Executive Director J.D. Newsom, grant writer Lynette Brim, and Susan Martin of Terlingua Fire and EMS, TFEMS, were on hand to field questions and suggestions from the community. The BBRHD announced last June that Presidio and Terlingua were the recipients of a large grant from the USDA. This week's town hall was an important step towards realizing long-term goals. Presidio will open an after-hours clinic. Terlingua will have a part-time clinic for the first time in 2 decades. Exactly what Terlingua's clinic will look like has yet to be determined. The original USDA grant includes operational costs, but does not cover the construction of new facilities. The existing TFEMS response building is pretty occupied, according to Martin. Instead, Newsom posed the idea of a mobile clinic, a service that Preventative Healthcare Services already offers in Presidio County. Before the opening of a pharmacy in Marfa, prescriptions for locals were also dispensed on wheels. "In theory, you could start that tomorrow," he said. Martin thought it was a good place to start, especially for a community as dispersed as Terlingua. As a first responder, she's traveled all over South Brewster County to treat community members in distress. "We can get closer to our people, so it's not as much of a challenge to come to the doctor," she said. "I think it fits the way we live down here." In addition to the new clinics, both Presidio and Terlingua will also benefit from a community paramedicine program to expand the range of services that local EMTs are able to provide. "For me, it's the most exciting part of this project," said Newsom. "It's going to provide a very impactful service to some of the most vulnerable residents in Terlingua." Paramedics have an advanced EMT certification that expands their scope of care to provide certain medicines en route to the hospital. Community paramedicine takes that training out of the ambulance and applies to non-emergency settings. Community paramedics can provide certain kinds of primary care, such as collecting blood and urine samples, instructing patients on proper use of medication, and conducting checkups, like well baby visits. The BBRHD is partnering with Texas Tech's Health Sciences Center in El Paso to provide training for first responders and to collect data to help keep the program on target. The ultimate goal of the program is to reduce transports to the hospital by at least 25%. Easing the pressure on a strained rural EMS system. Martin explained that the original concept of community paramedicine was to provide follow-up care. Providing a checkup after a hospital stay or an office visit so that patients don't have to leave home to see the doctor. That model has been quickly evolving, especially within rural medicine. She would like to see the program adapted to suit Terlingua's unique needs. By encouraging folks to call the community paramedics directly to see if issues can be resolved at home, rather than traveling an hour or more to see a doctor. "It's a great unknown," she said, "but I want to bring healthcare to you guys." Bundy's conversation was just the tip of the iceberg. One of the main challenges in Terlingua will be determining demand. Because the population fluctuates with the seasons, it can be difficult to predict when folks will need medical services. That same fluctuation also makes it difficult to provide stable jobs for the professionals who would potentially staff these services. Another unknown is telemedicine. In the past few years, the field has exploded, particularly in terms of access to mental health care. Newsom had even explored the possibility of an automatic diagnostic kiosk that could dispense medicine, but wasn't sure if that would necessarily be the right fit for Terlingua. The machines had only been piloted in areas with a high population density. Martin agreed, hoping instead to bring patients face-to-face with people they know and trust. "You can't bring in a $300,000 robot and fix everything," she said. "I think you could do a lot more with a lot less." The grant also provides funding for a social worker to help connect locals with resources and to encourage people to ask for help. The bigger picture to me is prevention, knowing what you need to do before it's an emergency, Martin said. "I love the people that make up Terlingua and their independent spirit, but we all need help sometimes." BBRHD is shooting to start clinic services early next year, hopefully by February 1st, if not sooner. Newsom was also hoping that the paramedicine program could get off the ground by August 1st, dependent on TFEMS' ability to hire new staff members. "As soon as they come on board, they're launching," he said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, June 15th. Vedana arrested on arson charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahan's man was recently charged with arson after he admitted to setting several small grass fires near the interstate last Friday morning. Monahan's Police Department officers arrested Julio G. Vedana, age 47, of 605 South Teresa Street on June 9th on a charge of arson, a second-degree felony. Officers were called to the 800 block of Northwest Interstate 20 Service Road near the Hampton Inn on Friday around 9:30 a.m. in reference to three small grass fires actively burning along the service road. Members of the Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department were also called to the scene to extinguish the fires. According to Monahan's Police Department Captain Stormy Laws, quote, "A city waste truck driver saw a Hispanic male, who he knew to be Vedana, running from the location of the fires and called police. Vedana was located in the 700 block of 19th Street a short while later." Quote, "Officer spoke to Vedana, and he admitted to starting the fires because he thought people were following him," Laws said. Vedana was subsequently arrested and taken to Ward County Jail, where he is currently being held on a $25,000 bond. The offense carries a punishment of 2 to 20 years confinement in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Vote to demolish home fails after hearing. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. After a heated and lengthy discussion during a public hearing to declare the property at 518 West 14th an unsafe structure and to order the property demolished failed, the process of getting the property back up to city code will start all over. The Monahan City Council declined to approve the findings of City Building Inspector Joel Melendez regarding the property, which were presented to the council by City Manager Rex Thee. The condition of the home and property has been a long-running code enforcement saga even before the home caught fire in January 2022. The fire was later determined to be caused by space heaters being knocked over. The council met in regular session on Tuesday and held the public hearing regarding the property. The public hearing gives the homeowner or any citizen an opportunity to speak on the property. Once the public hearing was opened by Mayor Adam Steen, Thee showed the council and those in attendance aerial pictures of the property, saying, quote, "Melendez and code enforcement have looked at the property and declared it unsafe. The home burned and is inside property which is out of code and in violation of city ordinance," end quote. Property owner Jose Vasquez was present for the hearing to speak on his own behalf regarding his property, where he currently lives in a trailer that has water and utilities hooked up. Vasquez told the council when his home caught fire, he didn't have any of the equipment or help to clean up the property. Quote, "2 days before the fire, I crushed my foot and had to have a toe amputated. Nonetheless, I have been working on the property, cleaning stuff up and hauling items off as I can. I need time. I lost everything in this fire, my tools, as well as personal items and family memories," Vasquez said. At the time of the fire, Vasquez was without a vehicle or financial means to take care of the cleanup of the property on his own. Quote, "I didn't have a vehicle or trailer then, but I got one 3 months ago, and I'm able to work now, but I need to be able to live and pay off bills too, as well as fix up the property and haul items off," he said. Vasquez asked the council for 5 months to get the property back into city code. Vasquez put a fence around his property in order to keep people out and is not to pose a danger to the community. However, Thee told Vasquez, since he did not pull a permit before building the fence, it would have to come down and be rebuilt back to city code. Quote, "If I had the funds to hire someone with a backhoe to come in and take care of this for me, I would have already done it. I'm doing this all on my own, and I can't afford for the city to come in and put a lien on my property either. So all I'm asking for is a little time to take care of it, and I would appreciate it if you could see in my favor to help me out," Vasquez said. According to Texas Local Government Code 214, if the order had passed and the property was declared unsafe and the owner did not comply with the order and demolish the house within 10 days, then the city will step in and demolish it. The city will then obtain a lien on the property for the cost of the demolition. Vasquez told the council even though the house is not salvageable, he has plans for the property. Quote, "I want to make the backside of the property into a storage building to store the tools and items I have been able to salvage. I've been a fabricator for a long time, and I recycle in order to build things. So even though this may look like junk to others, there is a lot of good supplies and usable items," he said. Councilman Calvin Carroll told Vasquez, quote, "Since you don't have the funds or resources to clean the property, seems to me you would be better off having the city step in, clean the property, and put a lien on it," end quote. Vasquez responded by saying he had a friend with a backhoe business who has offered to trade out work and help him with the property. Code enforcement sends notices to property owners who are in violation of any city ordinance, giving the owner a set amount of days to get the property in compliance. Vasquez told the council he did not get any of the notices mailed to him regarding the property in violation of city code until just recently, although he did state he does get mail in his mailbox at his address. Quote, "I found out about this hearing because Mr. Covington personally brought me a copy of the letter to my house," he said. Thee provided a file folder to the council with all the correspondence between the city and Vasquez. Thee told the council on February, Vasquez submitted a letter saying he would have the property cleaned up within 10 days of that letter. In March, he asked for 8 months to clean off the house, which was destroyed in the fire. Quote, "You were already given several months to clean this up, and then it was extended for several more months, and now you're asking for more time. My concern is in 5 months that we will still be looking at nothing done, and we have been told by you before that all you need is time and you'll get it cleaned up," Thee said. Vasquez said, quote, "I understand what you're saying, but I was very limited on resources and had to sit around waiting on people to show up. Now I don't have to rely on others because I have the resources." Mayor Steen thanked Vasquez for speaking on the property and said the council would take his remarks into consideration during their decision. Quote, "My property is my concern, just as anyone's property would be to them, and I have to stand up for myself, and I am trying to do something about it, and I'm not trying to walk away from it like you think I am," Vasquez said. Councilman Wilson asked if a legal document could be drawn up, which states he has 5 months to complete the cleanup, and if it isn't done, then the city will take action. Thee referenced the file folder again regarding the notice sent to Vasquez regarding the city code violations on his property. At least one was sent certified on November 2, 2021, for the cleanliness of the property and returned with a signature. While holding the file folder up, Thee said, quote, "You're asking about legal means of having this property cleaned up. This is it, and it has taken place. It is absolutely the council's right to have the code enforcement officer give him some more time, and it would be on paper in the forms we have, just like these are. So the matter of going to court or making a contract, it is a process of sending notices, giving him a certain amount of time, and if it is still not done, then we come here and do this all over again," end quote. Councilman Jeppy Wilson said, quote, "The challenge seems to be a lack of communication and needs to be fixed. Then once it's fixed, then we have clear grounds to move forward," end quote. Carroll said, quote, "I'm concerned because we have a damaged structure that is beyond repair and can't be lived in. You're collecting stuff to rebuild, and I have been a contractor myself, and you can't work in these conditions. Not only that, but some of the stuff has to be moved to begin tearing down. Even if I was 30 years younger, I couldn't get this cleaned up in the 5 months working by myself with a backhoe and a trailer," end quote. Vasquez answered by saying, "I have cleaned some room in the back in order to pull a trailer in by the back gate, and maybe you couldn't get this done in 5 months, but I know I can," end quote. Wilson reminded the council Vasquez did say he has help now and will not be working on this alone. Vasquez said he feels attacked by the city because of his limited resources. Quote, "I want to avoid the council running over Mr. Vasquez because he is limited on his resources. We should always make a fair decision regarding of who they are or what resources they have available," Wilson said. Thee added, quote, "It is always the city's intent to have the property owners to get their properties up to code and keep them up to code. That is the whole reason for this process," end quote. After the public hearing on the property was closed, the next agenda item was to act on the findings. Councilman Calvin Carroll offered the motion to proceed with cutting off Vasquez's utilities, demolishing the structure, and putting a lien on the property. Mayor Adam Steen asked for a second, but none was offered, while Councilman Richard Hawkins, Wilson, and Ivy Valenzuela stayed silent. For lack of a second, the motion failed, and the code enforcement will begin the process over, Thee said. Quote, "We will have Mr. Covington come meet with you and we will set a certain amount of days to get the house torn down and the property cleaned up, but it will be expected the property will meet city code at some point, Thee told Vasquez. Hawkins asked Vasquez to come back to the council to keep them updated on the progress of the cleanup. Fireworks, outdoor burning ban renewed. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. In Monday morning's regularly scheduled Ward County Commissioners Court meeting, after the pledges, invocation, and establishing a quorum, Ward County Judge Greg Holly renewed an order prohibiting outdoor burning. The order states, "The Commissioners Court of Ward County has found that circumstances present in all or part of the unincorporated area create a public safety hazard that would be exacerbated by outdoor burning." The restrictions in this order are the standard county restrictions and does not prohibit the burning of household trash in containers covered by metal grating, outdoor cooking, or burning in metal pits and grills, including the burning of wood for such purpose, or other outdoor burning activities as permitted by the Ward County Fire Marshal, Billy Riley, in his sole discretion. Under the same topic, an order prohibiting certain fireworks in unincorporated areas of Ward County was also renewed. The order states, "No person may sell, detonate, ignite, or in any way use fireworks classified as skyrockets with sticks and missiles with fins in any portion of the unincorporated area of Ward County." Quote, "Permissible fireworks are all the various fireworks that are not classified as skyrockets or fin missiles. All the firework stand owners know what can be sold and what is banned," Holly said. The order also states, "No person may detonate, ignite, or in any way use fireworks in any portion of the unincorporated area of Ward County, except for the following locations: the northernmost portion of the parking lot to the Ward County Coliseum." Quote, "If a person knowingly or intentionally violates a prohibition established by this order, they can be charged with a Class C misdemeanor," Holly said. The drought is not over for Ward County. The western part of the county is holding at 300 to 400 dryness level, and eastern Ward County, where Monahans is located, is in the 500 to 600 dryness level. The Texas A&M Forest Service uses the Keach-Byram Drought Index for determination of drought conditions in the state of Texas. It is an index used to determine forest fire potential. The drought index is based on a daily water balance where a drought factor is balanced with precipitation and soil moisture assumed to have a maximum storage capacity of 8 inches and is expressed in hundredths of an inch of soil moisture depletion. The drought index ranges from 0 to 800, where a drought index of 0 represents no moisture depletion in the soil, and an index of 800 represents absolutely dry conditions. In other business, the court approved a usage agreement between the Monahans Wicked Piute ISD, the Ward County Golf Association. The two entities met with each other to set the rules and fees for the Monahans High School and Walker Junior High School golfers. MWP ISD agrees to maintain the $7,000 fee schedule for court usage, school-hosted tournaments, and camps. There are no fees associated with tournaments hosted by MWP ISD to include varsity, JV, and junior high tournaments. Monahans High School and Walker Junior High players can play golf and hit range balls year-round free of charge. All boys and girls, head and assistant golf coaches will not be charged green fees, cart fees, trail fees, or cart storage fees. All teams and coaches will participate in at least one community service event at the golf course per year, and course maintenance will help with the upkeep of the school facilities, including the short game practice area between holes 3, 4, and 14, as well as the range area next to the indoor facility. Another agenda item needing the commissioner's approval was hiring Loretta Pipkin as Ward County Treasurer. Pipkin has been serving as Assistant Treasurer under Carly Ennis, who will now be training for the Ward County Auditor's position. Pipkin will serve out the remainder of the four-year position from August 1st to December 1st, 2024. Then the four-year term will resume upon election. Quote, Loretta will do a very good job. We have a great bunch of people working at the courthouse, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols said. In other actions, commissioners also voted to renew the Texas Association of Counties Health and Employee Benefits Pool, TAC-HEBP. The rates for the health plan, which covers county employees and retirees, increased slightly to 8.1% for health care, dropped 3% for dental care, and remained the same for vision care. Also approved was the acceptance of a 24-month contract with Alternative Life Solutions Counseling to provide non-residential individual sex offender counseling services in the Juvenile Probation Department. The services for detained juveniles will focus on crisis intervention, development of coping skills, anger, family conflict and issues, and development of healthy relationship skills. In other regular business, the commissioners acknowledged and approved the audit report for the tax assessor collector tax and escrow accounts. Quote, Ellen has always done an outstanding job on all these things. She has helped me tremendously over the years and made my job easier, Holly said. Other regular business attended to by the commissioners included approving the county and hospital budget amendments, approving payment of the county bills, approving the county officers' reports, and review the month of March financials for the hospital. Present for the meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, and Judge Greg Holly. Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms was absent from the meeting. The next regularly scheduled Ward County Commissioners meeting will be June 26 at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioner's meeting. 18-year-old killed in Tuesday crash. Dakota Mason Scott, age 18, of Crane, was killed in a two-vehicle wreck on FM 1233, 6 miles southwest of Monahans, on Tuesday, June 13th, around 5:30 a.m. According to Stephen Blanco, sergeant with the Texas Department of Public Safety, Scott was traveling westbound on FM 1233 when, for unknown reasons, he veered off the roadway. Scott then overcorrected and veered his vehicle back into the eastbound lane, where it struck a 2007 Peterbilt truck head-on. Members of the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department were called to the scene to extract Scott from the 2002 GMC Sierra pickup he was driving. Scott was pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace Roy Bean. The driver of the Peterbilt, Dennis Del Pino Amador, age 47, of Miami, Florida, was not injured. Weather conditions were clear and dry at the time of the crash. Trooper Sky Taylor of Monahans
investigated the accident.
County drug dog retires after 8 years of service. Ward County Deputy Sheriff Drug Dog Angus, shown with Deputy Sheriff Tommy Acosta, who has been Angus's handler for the past 3 years, was officially retired Monday morning during the Ward County Commissioners' meeting. Acosta signed adoption papers to take Angus as his own dog and to care for him for the remainder of his life. Angus, a black lab, was born on October 22, 2012, and became a drug dog on 2015, originally with Chief Deputy Michael Franco as his handler. Acosta took over as Angus's handler in 2020. Over the years, Angus was instrumental in a long list of drug seizures. He worked on search warrants, traffic stops, and drug interceptions. Quote, "We will miss him, but he has earned a rest," Sheriff Ferenvalle said. Angus will be replaced by a 2.5-year-old German Shepherd that is currently being trained in drugs, tracking, and apprehension.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.